WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Robert Gates confirmation hearings are currently investigating whether Gates slanted intelligence reports to fit the CIA's ideological agenda in the Soviet Union, the Middle East, and Latin America. And the question remains, how much did Gates know about the Iran-Contra affair? And if he didn't know anything, how did he manage to stay so uninformed? My guest, Sam Dillon, is the author of a new book investigating one of the CIA's most controversial covert operations of the 1980s, its funding of Nicaragua's Contra rebels. Dillon is a reporter for the Miami Herald. He was part of a team of reporters that won the Pulitzer Prize for coverage of the Iran-Contra scandal. I asked him if the Contra Army was really a creation of the CIA.
It was not a CIA creation in its first year, but on the other hand, it wasn't much of an army then either. The original Contras that maybe amounted to about, say, 200 carried out a series of minor uprisings, ambushes, armed rebellions in northern Nicaragua in the years 1980 and early 1981. They fled to Honduras and were essentially refugees there when the Reagan administration decided to build a paramilitary force to confront the Sandinistas. And at that point, what had been not much of an army ceased to be what it had been and definitely became a CIA-created military force. They were completely made over. They were enlarged many times their original size. They were given sophisticated weaponry, and the CIA controlled them throughout the rest of the war.
How did the CIA recruit Contras?
Well, they recruited the commander of the Contra force through most of the war. His name was Enrique Bermudez. He was a guard colonel who had been
From Somoza's National Guard.
Yeah, he had worked. He had a 30-year career in the National Guard. Had been at the time of the Sandinista Revolution in 1979, Somoza's military attaché in Washington. And within months of the Sandinista Revolution in 1979, was in contact with the CIA, and within a year and a half had begun traveling in the region, putting together the force. He recruited, he and his associates recruited an officer corps. You know, they worked the phones. They had money from the CIA to pay these officers. And they did it exclusively from the ranks of the former guard, the defeated guard. The fighters came from, in the first days, they were refugees who had fled Nicaragua to Honduras. But then the leaders of those refugees were then recruited by Enrique Bermudez to go back into Nicaragua and carry out a recruiting campaign for fighters. And some of the fighters that were recruited did so voluntarily, and some of them didn't. Some of them were coerced in a variety of ways to join the force.
Was there a division within the Contras between those people who genuinely wanted to join and were, you know, had a personal motivation to do so, and those people who were recruited for money?
Well, yeah, that was the difference between, that was the tension in the force throughout the war. It was a tension between what was essentially a mercenary army and the patriots of the force who were fighting for principle and to whom money was not much of a motivation. The Air Force, the politicians, the logistical men, the medical corps, much of the officer corps, these were mercenaries who received salaries, $800 a month, $1,000 a month, $2,000 a month. And that money was a powerful influence in their thinking. The fighters weren't mercenaries. They got nothing and fought for for principle. There were continual divisions between the peasants and the guards.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Sam Dillon, and he's a reporter for the Miami Herald. In fact, he was part of a team of reporters that won a Pulitzer Prize for their investigation of the Contras. Dillon is the author of a new book called Commandos, the CIA and Nicaragua's Contra Rebels. Now, the CIA chose the leaders of the Contras, and you say that the Contras became divided into two parts, a military part and a political part, and the CIA chose a different kind of leadership for each. For the political leadership, you say that they chose people who were familiar with the United States corporate world and who had a good ability to come north and talk to Congress and be very persuasive.
That's right. One of the most famous of the political representatives was Adolfo Calero, who was, professionally, he was the manager of the Coca-Cola factory in Managua. And there were a number of others of the early FDN directorate who were the representatives in Managua of some U.S. Corporation. That was a problem. That became a serious problem in terms of articulating the political goals of the movement, because all these peasants that were fighting in the war had their own motivations for taking up arms against the Sandinistas. They were land disputes. They were questions of local authority. They resented police abuses. And they had quite a different set of... Their agenda was badly articulated, but it was there. On the other hand, the businessmen that the CIA recruited in salary, they had a completely different agenda, and which was partly dictated to them by the CIA in order to influence the Congress. In other words, essentially an American agenda, and so that's a continuing problem. Many of the problems faced by the demobilized Contras in Nicaragua today are serious because although they shed the blood and did the fighting, they really weren't taken into account in the negotiations.
What didn't they get that they wanted?
Well, among other things, they didn't get the land that they were promised, although there have been a number of attempts to distribute land to demobilized Contra fighters. Thousands of them remain landless, as they were before the war started. And then in terms of security, the most serious problem that they face is that the Sandinistas continue to control the police in northern Nicaragua. The process that occurred at the end of the war was that the state security director, which was the plainclothes police force under the Sandinistas, was technically abolished, but in dozens and dozens of towns across rural Nicaragua, the local state security agent just ceased to be the state security agent and became the local police chief. And we have the OAS has reported about 70 murders this year of Contras. Well, all of these things could have been there. They were not on the agenda in the final negotiations. And in retrospect, part of the problem was that the people that were doing the negotiations were these business people who were originally recruited by the CIA and had their own agenda that they looked after in the negotiations.
Let me reintroduce you. My guest is Sam Dillon. He's a reporter with the Miami Herald and author of the new book Commandos, the CIA and Nicaragua's Contra Rebels. We're going to take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Journalist Sam Dillon is my guest, author of the new book Commandos, the CIA and Nicaragua's Contra Rebels. Let's get back into some of the history of the Contras and then we'll talk some more about what the status of the new version of the Contra Army is now. How did, you know, after the CIA virtually recreated the Contra Army, paid its leaders, paid a lot of the fighters, how did the CIA create the whole image of the Contra freedom fighter? You know, the image that was presented to us in America.
Well, they were aware of this, of the political liability that came with recruiting the guard, the former guardsmen to be the officer corps. One of the anecdotes or one of the sort of incidents that I learned of in the course of reporting the book was came about in it probably happened many times in the original training camps set up in 1981, where these guardsmen were training peasants to be a functioning army. You had CIA agents, you had Argentines, and you had Bermudas helicoptering into these camps to look things over and taking photos. And when Bermudas and the CIA men were setting up the photos, they invariably wanted the guardsmen out of the photos. They wanted the peasants to step forward and to be the front and center as the freedom fighters.
I realize this might be obvious, but why would it have looked so bad to accurately portray how many members of Somoza's former National Guard were actually in the Contra Army?
Well, because they were the Guard had a very bad reputation, and during the fighting in 1978 and 1979 that ended in Somoza's defeat, carried out incredible abuses. At one point, they were dumping burning barrels of oil and kerosene out of planes onto their own cities in order to defeat the Sandinistas. So the American authorities who recruited these men needed them to make the force work as a military force. There was no doubt about that. But they recognized from the beginning that there was this liability, a political liability to them.
Did you learn anything about how the Contra Army was changed after the Boland Amendment in 1984 cut off official funds from America?
I found that to be very interesting because Americans have tended to view the entire Nicaraguan war in terms of what they know about that Iran-Contra scandal, which just lasted a couple years. What I have found interesting in talking to Contras about that period was that very little changed during that two-year period, while North was essentially in control of the army. Supplies dwindled, coordination was somewhat fragmented, but essentially it was the same war to them.
We're still trying to get to the bottom of what happened during the Iran-Contra scandal, but I'm wondering if you think that it's kind of scandalous how the CIA backed the Contras before the Boland Amendment, when it wasn't illegal for them to send money to the Contras. Do you think it's a scandal that the CIA presented the Contras to us as these great freedom fighters when in fact the CIA had created an army of mercenaries?
Again, the army was only part had an element in it that was a mercenary force. A lot of the fighters were fighting for different reasons, but it was a covert operation, much like I think many other covert operations that the CIA has carried out. These things tend to go wrong; they tend to go badly. It's not really that easy to overthrow an established government with a proxy army, and when the plans go awry and the results don't happen immediately, what tends to happen is that the covert operators look for increasingly harebrained schemes to bring results. And so there were a variety of wild and unfortunate things that happened in the early years before the Iran-Contra scandal burst onto the American scene. The funding cutoff that set up the scandal was itself the result of the CIA mining of the Nicaraguan harbors in 1984. This was a very bad idea. They were not Contras that did it. They were a completely mercenary force based in El Salvador that, using a mother ship, put maritime mines in the harbor at Corinto that damaged Soviet and Panamanian and Dutch and British and Japanese freighters. And when Congress got word of this, I mean, they just hit the ceiling.
The Iran-Contra scandal is, of course, an important subject in the Gates confirmation hearings. What do you want to know about Gates? If you were in the committee that was putting questions to him, what would you be asking?
Well, the atmosphere that's coming out of those hearings, it reminds me so much of the atmosphere that prevailed in Honduras during this war. This kind of atmosphere in which you weren't supposed to ask when Alan fires the Central American Task Force chief who testified a couple of weeks ago in the Gates confirmation hearings, was describing this ambiance that prevailed where the president had made it clear that he wanted the Sandinistas to cry uncle, and he wanted his men to make it happen. And in that environment, illegal acts were the norm, and if you were a covert operator and you sensed illegality, you were essentially supposed to look the other way. I'm watching as Gates describes that he knew nothing of the Iran-Contra scandal until just days before the rest of the American public learned it on CNN. I just sensed that this sort of look the other way attitude, it was very prevalent in Honduras. A number of people have asked me why, when all these abuses were so common and so widespread along the border, where the Contra army was brutalizing its own men, why didn't we know? And the reason is that the people that were working in the Tegucigalpa embassy, who routinely came across these abuses, refugee officials out along the border, I mean, they knew these things. But there was this environment in which you weren't supposed to report it.
So I think what you're suggesting here is that if Gates didn't know about the Iran-Contra story, it's because he didn't want to know. He was not listening for it. Do you know what I'm saying? That it was like intentionally not knowing. So
well,
that
Fires was quite explicit about that. I was struck by the candor. He said there were things that you didn't want to know if you had to testify. And I'm sure that the most professional among them took that attitude. I mean, if Gates was in a position to know about all this, he was the deputy director of the CIA. Now, if he didn't know, why didn't he know?
There are some Contras who have rearmed, and they're being referred to as re-Contras. Why have they rearmed? What is that about now?
Well, it varies. There are about 600 demobilized Contras who have taken up their arms again. Some of them, and I would say the predominant faction among them, have taken up arms essentially in self-defense. I mentioned earlier how the state security agents, the Sandinista secret police, as the President Chamorro came in, just essentially made a horizontal shift and took on the post of local police chief. And there have been a series of unexplained killings of Contras. The OAS, who is monitoring the violence, has counted about 70 killings this year. There were about 70 killings last year. This makes the Contras that are out there unarmed feel very insecure, and that is essentially the principal demand that the re-Contras have when in the talks they've had with the OAS and the Chamorro government. They want the Sandinista police withdrawn from those rural areas. There is another tendency, I think, in the re-Contra groups, which is that some of the peasant fighters, the process of joining the Contra army was on one level profoundly liberating for a peasant teenager. They were given a rifle, and they were liberated from the process of having to crop fields. And I think that the reality is that many of the those who are influential in the re-Contra movement are simply people who carried a gun for a long time and they came to like it. And so I think there's a fringe to this movement that is essentially just kind of banditry.
Well, there's tens of thousands of weapons still in civilian hands from the Contra days, and I think the government wants to round them up but is having a hard time doing it.
That's right. That's right. And from the Sandinista days too. The Sandinistas, as part of their self-defense program, handed out, like you say, AK-47s are all over Nicaragua. It's not a problem to get a gun. You know, the danger in Nicaragua, and it's not we're not recognizing it for the first time, the danger has always been that it would become a sort of a Beirut situation in which factions would proliferate and we would just have essentially chaotic decades of war in which every dispute is solved by gunfire. Well, it's, you know, the idea that 70 people have been killed this year, 70 Contras, it's quite disturbing to Contras who are out there trying to resettle. But from the point of view of the OAS monitors, I think they make a good point. They say, you know, 70 deaths, it's a lot, but it's not really that many. And if you consider the sort of legacy of bloodshed that we're facing, this was a very, very profoundly bitter war. Brother killed brother. There were the feelings, the Sandinistas, for instance, that watched as Nicaraguans allowed themselves to be recruited into a CIA-dominated army. I mean, this was a, from the point of view of a Sandinista, this was a, just an extraordinarily treasonous act. Given this extremely polarized environment, the OAS people don't necessarily view the idea that 70 people have been killed as a failure. They remain optimistic that we're on the road to peaceful coexistence.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Yeah, well, it was lovely to talk to you.
Sam Dillon is the author of Commandos, the CIA, and Nicaragua's Contra Rebels. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.